This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I am still hearing from baseball fans who are buzzing about the World Series Game 5, which conveniently lasted more than 5 hours. In fact, 5 hours and 17 minutes, which is nearly 3 hours longer than the opener, which featured the same two starting pitchers. Remember I told you a couple of weeks ago that I had changed my mind about my favorite professional postseason in sports? And I told you it was baseball. There was no clock on the games, the strategies, the moments. I just love the way that it played out like a chess match, or in the case of the Astros and the Dodgers, slugfest after slugfest after slugfest. Well, this World Series has done nothing to change my mind. It's only reinforced. Holy cow, if you are waking up on the East Coast this morning and you did not stay up for the completion of the game, forget that. If you didn't stay up for, say, the eighth inning, the ninth inning, or the 10th inning of last night's World Series Game 5, then you missed out. However, Yeah, exactly. Where you been at? You are in luck because the MLB Network has been replaying it. In fact, they're into the bottom of the 10th inning right now. Kenley Jansen on the mound. Evan Gattis is at the dish. So the drama has yet to unfold. But you want to listen to me and not turn that on. We're good here. So the MLB Network will be replaying it over and over and over again, no doubt. This was an instant classic. So many moments that we couldn't get through them all this hour. We already spent 2 hours talking about it. For those of you who are waking up, that included actually my mom, who didn't watch the end of the game. She and her husband turned off the TV. Now, remember, they're in Houston, but they turned off the TV because Mike, her husband, has to get up before 5 a.m. for work. And oh, so, no! no is right. That's what I say every time. He's always texting me before I'm even in bed. So he has to get up really early, and they turned off the TV because he had to go to bed. It's Sunday night, had to get ready for work, right? My mom is more of a night owl like me. So she's sending me texts from presumably the bedroom where it's dark and is saying, you have to tell me what's going on with the game. So I'm having to text my mom updates. The game ended 15 minutes before we went on the air. This is nuts. It's insane. It might have been one of the best World Series games I've ever seen. Maybe one of the best in history. Some of you have sent me a few that you would hold up to it and say, this one compares, this one competes. But this was a joyride. It was, as I've compared it to, your favorite roller coaster where you nearly get sick and throw up. But the thrills, oh, the thrills. So good morning to you. Good Monday morning to you. There's a lot still to digest as the Astros are one game away. One win away in Los Angeles from their first World Series title in franchise history. Let that sink in for a second. We love it when brand new franchises, or I should say when brand new fan bases, have a chance to experience the championship glow. And we've had some recently, or there have been really long droughts. So the Cleveland Cavaliers winning a title last year. And the droughts, of course, the Golden State Warriors had gone 40 years. The Kansas City Royals had gone 30 years. Clemson had gone since, what, it was the mid-80s, right? Since the last time that they had won a national championship in football. We're getting a lot of fresh blood. And here we are. The Astros, who've only been to two World Series in their history, didn't win a game before this year. They win the bookends of the three games at home on Friday night, where the bats seem to wake up. Of course, they lose Saturday and end up with, what, two hits or some such nonsense on Saturday? And then this game, 5 hours and 17 minutes long, but worth every single second. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio and the CBS Sports app. Thanks so much for tuning in. 855-212-4227. We've heard from people who went to the game, people who still aren't able to sleep or haven't been able to sleep because it was too exciting. We've heard people who had to leave their homes. They got kicked out because they were making too much noise and waking up the rest of the house. So, yeah, this is the kind of game that requires every ounce of emotion that you've got. And it also does the same for the teams. So it really is a shame that one of these teams had to lose. And I kind of felt that with every swing in momentum, with every big home run or tie ball game yet again. And as the tension built and you realized eventually someone's going to break through because they're running out of arms. And the arms that are out there, the pitchers that are out there, have already been used and overused. I mean, here it is nearly November. So, of course, we're talking about guys who their arms are ready to fall off. You're just hoping that you can survive and get that one more win or two more wins. So this was another game in which the home runs were flying out of the park, this time Minute Maid Park. Remember in game two, which we thought might be the end all to be all, the craziest of this fall classic, there were 8 home runs from game two in LA. And that game went into extras as well. But that was a new World Series record. 7 more in game 5 in Houston. 7 more. The Astros rallied from 4-0 down, from 7-4 down, and from 8-7 down. So they had to come back 3 separate times. But the Dodgers were just fine matching them. They rallied from an 11-8 deficit and a 12-9 deficit to tie the game in the top of the ninth. And it was essentially the top of the ninth when I ran out of words to be able to tweet and just started tweeting all kinds of odd symbols, like a little kid got a hold of your phone or something. So we'll pick it up there in the top of the ninth because, again, the Astros are up 12-9 and they're on the verge of taking this game finally. I mean, it was emotionally exhausting for sure. But, you know, a 3-run lead. It's kind of healthy, right? Not so much. Not in this series.
A 1-2, Puig lines one to deep left field, and it is into the Crawford box and a home run. Yasiel Puig, a 2-run shot. It is now 12-11.
Silence.
This game will not go quietly into this good night. The Dodgers won't let it, and the Astros won't let it. Wow. Pavelski on 2-2 to Taylor. Base hit into center field. Barnes comes in to score. And the Dodgers have tied it at 12. This surreal game continues.
No doubt. Charlie Steiner still had a voice at that point. Not quite 5 hours in, but the top of the ninth. And then Kenley Jansen comes in the bottom of the ninth. And he gets through that part of the order relatively easily. So we go into the 10th inning. And at this point in the 10th inning, the Dodgers and Astros each had 12 runs on 13 hits and 1 error. So heading into extra innings, we were already just about to hit the 5-hour mark. And again, each team had 12 runs on 13 hits, 24 runs and 26 hits between these two teams. Nerd alert. I don't think that's what Rob Manfred had in mind when he was addressing pace of play to start the year. Anyway, so with Yasiel Puig and Chris Taylor tying the game, Kenley Jansen getting them through that bottom of the ninth, we go into the 10th. And then it's another long, drawn-out inning. Here's the deal. How many runs in this World Series have been scored with 2 outs? That's the part of the drama that you just can't script. Because there's a part of you that thinks, okay, 2 outs. Oh, can kind of let your guard down a little bit as fans, right? But no, that's when these two lineups have done so much damage. I don't remember exactly what point in this game, but Fox, MLB on Fox, Joe Buck, used the stat that 16 of 22 Dodgers runs in the World Series had come with 2 outs. Well, that was a similar theme in the 10th inning because there were 2 outs in the bottom of the inning. Kenley Jansen's trying to get out number 6 on the mound, and he hits Brian McCann. Hits him on the hand. Brian McCann, he hits him. Gives him a free pass. And so then Derek Fisher comes in as a pinch runner. No, not that Derek Fisher. And then Jansen walks George Springer, and you can feel it. You can now start to feel it. It looked a little bit like he was pitching around George Springer, but that wouldn't make any sense, right? Because behind him is Alex Bregman.
Bregman 1-for-4 tonight. First pitch. And Alex lines this in the left center field. That's a base hit. Fisher around third and coming home. Ethier up with the baseball. The throw to the plate. Not in time. Astros win. Astros win. Alex Bregman comes through with a walk-off RBI single. And the Astros win 13-12-10. They lead the World Series 3-2.
Nutso. Just nutso. And credit Robert Ford and Steve Sparks on the Astros Radio Network. They did a fantastic job as well. So 5 hours and 17 minutes. It was a classic. It was 10 innings. It was 7 more home runs. It was 3 rallies by the Astros to get it back to even. And then 2 different rallies by the Dodgers. I broke one of the golden rules of Twitter. I actually retweeted one of my tweets a couple of different times because it was so apropos over and over and over again. I said something about not having faith in either one of these teams to hold a lead, and it just kept applying, and so I had to keep retweeting it.
It's gone!
But again, it sucks that either one of these teams had to lose a game like this because there was heart, there was soul, there was blood, sweat, and tears for both the Dodgers and the Astros. We as fans are major winners. It was an unbelievable experience. Game 5. How does that top game 2? And I still can't get over the fact that it was 3 hours longer than the opener. So Dallas Keuchel and Clayton Kershaw start this game the same as the opener, which was done in 2 hours and 28 minutes. And even then we knew that was an aberration and it probably wasn't going to happen again. But 3 hours longer? You could have played two game ones in the span of what it took to play game 5. So cray. OMG. I don't even say things like that, but that's what game 5 was all about. So coming up, I want you to hear from Clayton Kershaw and certainly from Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman and some of the others, AJ Hinch, who are involved. That was the last game in Houston for the year. So regardless of what happens, they're not going back to Houston, but what a way to close Minute Maid Park for the season. And it's not lost on anyone still, not in Houston, the Houston fan base, or around the country, what a lot of these baseball fans in Texas are still dealing with in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. And so for them to have Justin Verlander, who's been such a champion for them and for their cause, on the mound in game 6, guy who's been in 2 World Series and hasn't won yet, it's kind of a neat storyline. We'll see if it ends there on Tuesday. Don't know if it will. Wouldn't put it past the Dodgers to force a game 7. And secretly, not so secretly, that's what I'm rooting for. If you missed my conversation with Jenny Dial Creech, she covers sports for the Houston Chronicle. She's a columnist. And she got to the ballpark at 3:00 in the afternoon and then joined us live in our second hour. So she was just on her way home. You want to talk about dedication for the sports writers and the TV and radio crews that were there. We asked her what it was like inside Minute Maid Park, and we talked about the fallout with Yuli Gurriel and Yu Darvish and everything that happened on Friday. So if you missed that, it's podcasted, afterhoursamielawrence.com, as is the entire 4-hour show that is featured less football than what we normally do on a Sunday night and a Monday morning. But scooch over, NFL, because the World Series is kind of hogging that center ring of the circus. All right, 855-212-4227 at A-Law Radio. Glad that so many of you enjoyed World Series Game 5. We'll get inside the clubhouses for Dodgers and Astros coming up. It's a deep breath. It's a chance for them to regroup, but they don't even have 48 hours before game 6. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in on a Monday morning here on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
2 of the massive moments from game 5 for the home team, the Houston Astros at Minute Maid Park, but also 2 heartbreaking moments for Clayton Kershaw. You hear first Steve Sparks and then Robert Ford on the Astros Radio Network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Knowing Clayton Kershaw's postseason history, which in the last several years has been much better. Think about the opener and how efficient and fantastic he was, the double-digit strikeouts to help the Dodgers jump out to a 1-0 lead in this World Series. But considering all of the playoff demons that he's had, and it's not as though we as fans or as the media are the only ones who remember. Of course he does. Of course. There was the fifth inning, and having no rooting interest, I still wanted him to get through that fifth inning so desperately, because I just knew, you know, after everything he's been through, how much this is going to be something that haunts him if this is a game that's on him. Well, the Astros were already in a 4-0 hole because Dallas Keuchel didn't even make it out of the fourth inning. He gives up 4 runs. So the Dodgers hand their ace a 4-run lead. And you hear Yuli Gurriel ties it with a 3-run bomb. That was in the fourth inning. But then Kershaw comes back out. And there he is in the fifth. Of course, 2 outs. He's about to get out of the inning. The first 2 batters he faced, they were outs. And then a couple of walks. And Dave Roberts comes out, makes the change, puts in Kenta Maeda, who then gives up the Jose Altuve bomb. I mean, you get to the point this deep in a season, in a playoffs, where arms are just tired. And we had heard from Dave Roberts he wasn't going to use Brandon Morrow. And what does he do? He brings in Morrow for a fourth straight day of pitching, or fourth straight game of pitching. And Morrow doesn't have it. 4 runs on 6 pitches. That's it. 4 runs on 6 pitches. Kenta Maeda doesn't look quite the same. Kenley Jansen, this is the second time in the World Series in which he hasn't been able to close out and get the 6 outs. And then Clayton Kershaw. And I said this earlier on the show, I tweeted it as well. Call me a soft-heart emotional girl, but this is just how I am. I couldn't help feeling that same knot in my stomach for Clayton Kershaw after he gave up the 4-0 lead and then gave up, or, you know, was responsible for 2 of the guys on base that came around to tie it up again in the fifth. I couldn't help feeling that knot in my stomach for him. And it reminded me of how I felt for the Atlanta Falcons when they couldn't hang on to their lead in the Super Bowl. Not that it wasn't fantastic drama, and it was amazing to see a Super Bowl go into overtime and the Pats win it. But man, you just know the other side of it, the thrill of victory, but then the agony of defeat. And no doubt you could see it on Clayton Kershaw's face. You could hear it in his voice afterwards. The agony of defeat, feeling like this was all his fault. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227 on Twitter, at A-Law Radio. Want you to hear from some of the main pieces, the major names that you'll be talking about on Monday after World Series Game 5.
Everybody did as much as they possibly could to pick me up. And, you know, it's a testament to our team. We battled really hard and, you know, it's obviously a tough one to lose. I'm sure everybody's pretty exhausted after that one, emotionally and physically. Just it's a tough one. But you know what? We still got a chance at this thing, so we're going to go home and get ready to go.
Clayton Kershaw, obviously, completely dejected. But he's right. It's not over. And they do have a chance in game number 6, though it's Justin Verlander on the mound. He was the guy who started, or one half of the starting mix for that game 2 that went into extras and lasted, oh, you know, just a 4.5-hour game, not 5 hours and 17 minutes. How do you put this into words? How do you put this kind of game into words? Well, we were having trouble with it after so many hours and so many moments, you kind of run out of words that are applicable. And AJ Hinch was feeling the exact same way.
It's hard to put into words all the twists and turns in that game, the emotion, doing it home in front of our home crowd. Just exactly what you expect to come to the park with Keuchel and Kershaw pitching. You know, just a perfect setup game for a bunch of runs.
We knew going into this series this is the best offensive ball club that we were going to see all year. And they can slug you. They spoil pitches. They're athletic. And a credit to them. But our guys did the same thing. You know, they just got the hit when they needed. But I thought we did a lot of great things as well on our offensive side.
There were a couple of funny moments, social media or post-game interviews afterwards for the Astros. Obviously, adrenaline and every kind of emotion you can imagine running high at the highest of heights. And Carlos Correa wasn't part of that rally in the 10th inning. And so he is coming out of the dugout, and he's trying to wave around Derek Fisher, who's the pinch runner, but he's skipping up and down the baseline, winding his arm around, right, going kind of nuts. And then when he wants to tell Derek Fisher to slide, he gets down on the ground. He's like motioning right behind home plate. And he tweeted afterwards, because the Astros put out a GIF of it, really nutso. And he tweets afterwards he couldn't remember any of that. And then Justin Verlander, not that long after the game ended, he put two pictures up on Twitter. So one of them was him just modern day, maybe taken before the game. And then another one had kind of those filters on your phone where you can advance it in terms of time. And it looked like he was 40 years older. And he said that's what he looks like after game number 5.
Men who take the most selfies have higher levels of narcissism.
Yeah, so it's cool to have fun with it. And it's amazing to think about how this team is now one win away from the World Series and everything that went into it. But man, when you're in the middle of it, the tension in your gut and the drama and the heart rate, and we've heard from so many fans who enjoyed it, whether they were neutral and didn't have a rooting interest, but also Astros fans that can't sleep and Dodgers fans who we heard from one guy who was kicked out of the house because he lost it when everything happened with Kershaw. So you can find me on Twitter at A-Law Radio. Carlos Correa says he's going to have a heart attack with these games. So at least we've got 48 hours now before they have to get back on the field for game number 6, but fantastic. And 22 home runs in the World Series already. They're not done. They've still got at least one more game. But 22 home runs is a brand new World Series record. Nerd alert! Which is also so fitting for 2017, the year of the juiced ball and the home run. Wait, what? What are you gesturing at me for wildly?
The juiced ball.
I feel like it is.
Direct acknowledgement. Oh, you know we agree in here.
There's no way this just happens all of a sudden. I mean, I get that guys are changing swings now, and they are obviously shooting for the fences, so to speak. But in this particular case, there's got to be something to do with the ball. And pitchers are starting to talk about it, too. They're being more open about it.
Well, apparently the World Series ball is even different from the already juiced regular season ball. It's slicker. They say it feels like a receipt, like receipt paper, this leather on these balls for the World Series, and they're having trouble throwing breaking pitches. Verlander went on a whole little rant about it yesterday.
5 hours and 17 minutes. I mean, I didn't mind it, but I know there's a lot of people that think that's insane. Well, it was insane for sure. All right, on Twitter. Okay, enough. We don't need all 22 because that would be way too much. At A-Law Radio.
Homers is fun.
We'll try to work in some football too, but man, football, you got to share the center ring of the circus with the World Series.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Three receivers slot to the far side. Wentz takes the snap. He's back. He is floating it to Jeffrey, who has it on his feet at the 10-5. Touchdown, Alshon Jeffrey.
The voice of Carson Wentz, who for a brief moment on Sunday, okay, it was a couple of moments for a while, he led the NFL with 19 touchdown passes all by his lonesome. He doesn't anymore, but the Eagles are still firmly in possession of the best record in the NFL. So as they hit their midway point, they're 7-1 through 8 weeks, right? So they have literally come to their midway point of playing 16 weeks. A lot of teams on bye in week number 9, but not the Eagles. They have one of the latest byes in the NFL. But here they are. They've managed to navigate a lot of different teams, opponents, styles that they've played. And I like the fact that this particular Eagles team seems to be able to win a couple of different ways. So it was messy, nasty weather like it was for a lot of the games on the Eastern Seaboard on Sunday. Eagles, DC, so Redskins, Cowboys, then you had the Patriots and Chargers at Foxborough, plus you had the Jets and the Falcons, and all of them really affected by the weather. So this was not the prettiest win by any stretch of the imagination. It was another really slow start for the Eagles offense. They had 5 punts on their first 6 drives. but they were able to figure it out. So they had the 100 yards rushing. Their defense had a couple of interceptions, including a pick six by Jalen Mills. Carson Wentz had a couple of TD passes, and they just figured it out, and they put it together, and it was all three phases of the game, offense, defense, special teams, and that, of course, makes a team more formidable. And so here they are, their midway point of the season. They've got the best record in the NFL at 7-1. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Merrill Reese with the call of the Alshon Jeffrey TD pass, which is 53 yards. Kind of funny if you look at the NFC and look at the teams that are on top. You know me, I don't tell you who's going to win the Super Bowl in August, but a lot of people do like to go through that fun, somewhat futile exercise.
Quickly, Amy, what's your Super Bowl?
And if you look at the NFC right now, I dare say that there are probably plenty of people out there who didn't have this right at the midway point that the Eagles would be on top of the East, clear by two games, that the Vikings would be clear by a game and a half in the NFC North. So they were able to go to London, and they came out with a huge second half. The Vikings only gave up 3 points in the second half against the Browns. Meanwhile, they were able to put up three touchdowns in that second half. For a while there, I was worried that London football fans were going to end up getting an icky game, but it's all right. So the Vikings end up 6-2 now, so they're at the midway point as well. The Saints started 0-2, and now here they are with five straight wins. So next to the Eagles, the hottest team in the NFL. And it's been not just Drew Brees, though he did complete his 6,000th pass on Sunday, but it's been the defense with takeaways. And it was the defense that held the Chicago Bears on the last two drives and didn't allow them to score and come back. But it's also been the run game. Two more touchdowns for the Saints' rushing attack, although they did have two fumbles on Sunday. But you get a more well-balanced, well-rounded Saints team, and they haven't had that for several years. So the Saints on top of the NFC South by a half game. Panthers were able to win in Tampa Bay on Sunday, which all of a sudden the Buccaneers seem to have very little offense. And then the Seattle Seahawks and the Rams are tied atop the NFC West. And that kind of segues right into what was a crazy game between the Texans and the Seahawks in front of the 12th man on Sunday afternoon. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to put together our Monday MVP poll. For those of you who don't know, it's just an NFL poll. It's hard enough to be able to come up with just four candidates from the NFL every Sunday, but we invite you to go ahead and choose your Monday MVP. And one of the candidates comes from the game between the Texans and the Seahawks. And I don't know if you believe that, you know, the universe is balancing this out for the sports fans, but of course, Texans fans, Houston sports fans, for a couple of hours there, it was, oh, stake through the heart. That one hurt. Oh, no. And then, of course, you had the Dodgers jump out to a 4-0 lead with Clayton Kershaw on the mound. So the first few innings of the World Series game, it was that same kind of, like Halloween and a stake through the heart.
I have a huge heart.
Yes, but no platform to share that huge heart with us, at least for right now, Joe Girardi. I'm sure at some point we'll hear from you again. This is very fitting for Halloween. No, the stake through the heart is kind of fitting for Halloween. Anyway, so you had the Texans and the Astros not giving Houston sports fans what they wanted, but it didn't obviously stay that way. But this was a game that was it was a fun shootout. I don't want to say defense wasn't involved, because that wouldn't be completely accurate. Certainly Deshaun Watson, as a rookie quarterback, he giveth and he taketh away. So he did have four more touchdown passes, which ties him with Carson Wentz for the most in the NFL. How about that? We got a second-year QB and a rookie who've got the most TD passes in the league right now at 19. But there were also three interceptions for Deshaun Watson, and one of them came late, which Richard Sherman picked him off. Dare say it was one of those, hey, we're the veterans. Ah, you're just a rookie. I suck at trash talking, but something along those lines with more choice words mixed in, I would think. A little sharper language
But that's corner of the game.
Something like that. Only he wasn't mic'd up. So yes, Richard Sherman picks him off on the last drive when they're trailing by three. So you still have those moments. As great as Deshaun Watson has been, and the Texans put up 500-plus yards of offense, they do have the three interceptions from him as well. And so it's a learning process. It's ebbs and flows. Meanwhile, the Seahawks still have zero run game to speak of. I mean, nada. Into the third quarter, they had 7 yards rushing. The big seven. I mean, seven's a great number and all, but 7 yards rushing. So Russell Wilson, meanwhile, is doing the yeoman's amount of the work. And kind of interesting to think about Russell Wilson and a few years ago, him coming in and being installed as the starter in training camp and winning that job outright for Pete Carroll. I know Deshaun Watson was number two in the depth chart behind Tom Savage to start the season, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, he started for his rookie year. So anyway, just kind of the interesting dichotomy between Watson and Wilson. And Russell certainly has had so much experience already just in the first few years of his NFL career. So here they are trailing 38-34. They've got the length of the field to go. And it's kind of this moment like, hey, rookie, this is how it's done.
Seattle trailing by four. Wilson back to pass, throwing over the middle. Wide open. Touchdown. Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham scores. Seattle is back in front with 21 seconds to go. What a game.
Yeah, the 12th man almost drowns out Brendan Gowden on the Westwood One radio network. But yeah, that's what happens, the go-ahead score. And that was just the very end, kind of like the World Series game. It's impossible for me to go through every single moment and all the momentum swings, but it was a good one. A shootout at the OK Corral in Seattle between, well, not between Watson and Wilson, but between their respective teams. So Russell Wilson is one of our choices for Monday MVP. The poll is up now at After Hours CBS. Here I'll retweet. Although if you haven't checked out our show Twitter, producer Tom found some fantastic post-game gifts from the Astros. So they were, their social media account was kind of going nutso, and they were all excited about putting up gifts and celebrations. And the Justin Verlander set of pictures where he's aged 40 years from Game 5 of the World Series. So yeah, we've got Russell Wilson in there. Also, Shady McCoy, LeSean McCoy, huge day for him. And as much as the Patriots have got to be thrilled to get to the midway point at 6-2, Bills are keeping pace there at 5-2. And this was another Shady game in which he was fantastic. He was a huge weapon for them. So he's also in the poll. How about Juju Smith-Schuster? Big game for the rookie wide receiver. Tough lesson for Martavis Bryant to learn. He had a front row seat for the 97-yard bomb, which was the longest reception in Steelers franchise history. Oh, I know. Don't you want to hear it? You want to hear it again, don't you?
Ben in the shotgun stands in his end zone with two protectors. He's back. He waits. He fires down the field, and it's caught on a dead run. That is Juju Smith-Schuster. Foot race. 35-30, 25-20, 15-10. Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. 98 yards. Ben Roethlisberger to the rookie Juju.
Oh, ouch. Adding insult to the discipline of Mike Tomlin, though maybe it's a lesson that Martavis Bryant won't forget. And Isaac just said to me in my ear, as you were hearing that call from Bill Hillgrove on the Steelers radio network, imagine, and I was thinking the thing at the same time, I was thinking, imagine if he reached out and tripped him. You know, I mean, he was going down the center of the field. I think it was a post route, right? So he's kind of down the center of the field. But anyway, it would have been funny if, well, funny, haha, would have been kind of funny if Martavis Bryant had tripped him, tackled him, something like that.
honestly.
It would have been fun to have that on Facebook Live, too. So, yeah, these wide receivers with Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin, Ben Roethlisberger, got to rein them in. But it was back to the basics, the basics for the Steelers, as it has been now for several weeks, and that's Brown and it's Bell. And even though Big Ben didn't have a great game, the defense has been playing well, too, so check out the poll, again, on Twitter, at A-Law Radio or After Hours CBS. That's the name of the show here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Now, we're going to hear this together. I saw the quotes from Yasiel Puig after game five. As you can imagine, all devastated. We heard from Clayton Kershaw. Dave Roberts spoke too. And I saw a bunch of the other guys being interviewed inside the Dodgers clubhouse. I mean, this one sucks. There's just, it's like a punch to the gut. There's no way to get around it because they had the lead so many times. However, and I'm going to hear this audio with you for the first time, Yasiel Puig has essentially guaranteed that this one is not over in game six.
It's not going to be finished Tuesday. It's going to be game seven. And because as all the fans in Los Angeles expect a lot from us, from the spring training, and this team from the first day in the spring training, he do a lot of workout, a lot of preparation, a lot of mentality teams, and this is the reason my team is in the World Series right now.
I love Yasiel Puig. I've been waving that banner for all of this postseason. I know a lot of people think his act is over the top, but I think he's got the energy, the excitement. He's quirky. He licks the bat, whatever. The guy has contributed in a major way in the postseason. The Dodgers wouldn't still be playing if not for Yasiel. And having gone through what he went through last season where the Dodgers nearly traded him. Remember, they sent him down before the trade deadline. They sent him down to AAA, and they optioned him, and they essentially were trying to find someone to take him.
It's not going to be finished Tuesday.
Nope, not going to be finished on Tuesday, according to Puig. But he says that those, I think it was 3 weeks or so that he was down. He says that those weeks made a major impression on him, helped him to realize how easy it would be to lose all of this. And you know, he's originally from Cuba, defected. And so he's certainly lived through a lot more than many of us in the United States, different types of adversity and different types of life and death situations. And he's loving every second of it. He's got two little boys. He's more mature. Just the, you know, the bat lick thing maybe doesn't indicate the maturity, but this guy has made him, he's made a major change in his life and in his role with the Dodgers. And he is telling you it's not going to be finished on Tuesday. I like it. At least we get a chance to take a deep breath as fans. So sign up to be an O Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O Rewards members earn $5 back for every $150 they spend. It's fast, easy, free, only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. To see the store for details. We're back after Monday Night Football. Have a great Monday. After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.